Well, every Tuesday at this time, it's a great pleasure to welcome back Bobby Kerr of Down to Business on a Saturday, Bobby's Late Breakfast on a Sunday, and on a Tuesday, he's my agony uncle here on the Hard Shoulder, and he is at your service, a bit like Mrs. Slocum back in the day. Like her pussy, she's available to help you. Bobby is here to answer your queries. Just send them in on the text line 53106 or on agonyuncle@newstalk.com. Let's talk about, first of all, though, managers being uncomfortable with giving feedback to their employees. You're telling me about this Harvard Business Review. I mean, like, other than a pat on the back, you're doing a great job, Bobby. Like, I never get any feedback. What's the story here?
Well, I think managers are uncomfortable, according to the Harvard Review, are uncomfortable giving any feedback to employees. Too bad. Giving feedback is your job. And I think... people saying they're uncomfortable about it. If you don't give feedback to people, two things will happen. People will be in the dark and you'll get surprises. I think what they're saying here is that there are kind of three ways in which you deal with it in terms of making good practice. One is that you do it regularly and you make it part of your everyday. In other words, if you're nervous about giving communication to people, that you have meetings with people, that you do tell them what's going on and you ask them what's going on in their world. Very simple stuff, but you do it regularly and you do it often. You're also, in your communication, you need to be direct and clear. So, again, no fuzzy stuff. What is it you want? And if you've got to give bad news to an employee, you know, beating around the bush during your discussion, it just prolongs the agony. And finally, they say, and this is the Harvard Review, of course, saying that you make feedback a learning opportunity. And I'm holding up my hands here with inverted commas. You don't really like these kind of buzzwords, I know, but that's what Harvard are saying.
Other than a general thing, hey lads, you know, sales were great this week. Well done. The figures are up, or you know what, sales are not so good, or whatever. Other than a kind of generalism, how much depth are we talking about here?
Well, I think what we're doing, Ivan, is we're stating the obvious: is that when managers talk to their employees, everyone wins. You talk and you listen.
What level of depth?
Well, I think if you're a manager and you say you've 10 people reporting into you, how often should you meet them? You should meet them on their own on a fairly regular basis. And I think one thing that really infuriates employees and it leads to bad communication is that, oh yeah, we'll have our one-to-one every Friday, and every Friday I cancel it saying I'm too busy to meet you. Like, what does...
Well, I mean, once a quarter is enough.
Twice a year.
I mean, like, this business, I mean, like... Just get on with the bloody job. I mean, all this faffing around.
I'm not suggesting anybody faffs around.
You have too much time on your hands, Bobby.
No, I'm not suggesting this, but I do. Like, when I worked in Insomnia and I was...
Do your job.
When I was the managing director, I used to have a meeting every Thursday with the managers from each shop. They used to come, the meeting would start at 3, it would end at 5. There was a clear agenda, and I would tell them everything that was happening on the business. And now...
Sorry, this what level? Was this a conference call with managers?
No, this was when we had, like, say, 10 shops.
Okay.
And 10 of them would come up on a Thursday afternoon. When it came to 20, when it came to 30, it became more difficult, clearly. So, like, there's...
And how would you give a yardstick rule of thumb in relation to praise to criticism?
Well, I think honesty prevails, in my view. I think it's better to be positive if you can be positive. I think, like, I'm all for positivity, and I genuinely think, like, as long as positivity is genuine, I think there's nothing worse than fake positivity, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move to the...
We've loads of questions, so we better get into
it. We've an email from Mark in Dublin 1. Hi, Bobby. Heard you and Ivan talking about insurance last week, and the mention of the word makes my blood boil. I have a retail business in central Dublin. My insurance was 15,300 a week per annum last year. I got what was considered a spurious claim last year, and the insurance company settled it with the claimant for $5,000 without my consent. They said this was the cheapest option. Just got my premium for 2018, and surprise, it's gone from $15,000 to $21,000. It gets worse. I got another solicitor's letter this week about a supposed fall last month, 2 days after the records for the CCTV get deleted. So basically, I was thinking of liaising directly with the claimant solicitor, cutting out the insurance company and trying to settle it directly. That is with the claimant, right? So my premium doesn't go up again. this could put me out of business. What's your advice, Bobby?
Yeah, this is a real, now, and I have to preface this by a word of caution here. let's first look at the problem, first of all. So he had a claim. His insurance was 15. It goes up by $6,000. Interestingly, the insurance claim settled the claim for $5,000. So basically, he paid for the insurance company going out and settling it. If the insurance company say that without his consent, they don't need his consent. If he reads his policy, he'll see that they don't need his consent. Excuse me. Then he's now saying that he's got another claim in that he thinks is spurious, and he's thinking of cutting out the insurance company and dealing directly with the plaintiff's solicitor. Really, really dodgy thing to do.
Yeah, crazy thing to do. Because first of all, the solicitor, when he gets that call, say, okay, well, here's an admission of guilt straight away, and therefore, this guy, I have him over a barrel.
Well, more worryingly, if the insurance company found out, whatever way they found out, that he was dealing with somebody without telling them, he could invalidate his whole insurance. So
if you're going to do it, definitely get the insurer's permission. They'll say no anyway.
They could say yes if it was in their interest. In other words, if there was an ability to settle it more than it would cost, they may. But I think cutting out the insurance, and I really feel for Mark's predicament here, because like when your insurance company goes up to that level, you are talking about the difference between survival and not. And clearly he's close to the edge here. So I just urge him to be really cautious here and not to do anything stupid. The temptation is to go and square it quietly.
He could make it worse. Okay.
But it could blow up in his face.
Okay, Frank in Dublin 8 asks, I've been offered a job in a large hardware chain. Just got my contract and it says I have to be willing to subject myself to having my bag, my locker and myself available for security checks after my shift every day. Is this legal? So obviously the supposition here is that his new employer has a problem with pilferage. Things, spanners and all this good stuff is walking out the door.
Right.
What do you think?
I think, and again, he's been offered a job. The employer has been upfront here. He's saying this is our policy. It needs to be written into the contract of employment, which is clearly what's happening here. I think in companies, while they have the absolute right to do this, they need to be really careful, because you need to be...
What's the legal situation? Do they have an entitlement to go through your pockets?
They do. Yeah, they do. Particularly if they
Well, you'd map, say that. You're a they, boss's guy.
Well, no, if they map that. It out in the conditions of employment. Go. But listen, hold on a second. So if an employer, you still need to be careful. If you're an employer, you need to respect the employee's dignity. In other words, if you go and have a public search of a guy's bag on the shop floor in the canteen, that's a no-no. In other words, it would be deemed as inappropriate. But
body searching your employees seems a bit rough.
How to conduct?
I mean, next thing you'd be rifling their pockets to see that they take a tenner out of the till.
Another thing is that you would ask, rather than saying to somebody in a bag, you'd say, have you a receipt for that? In other words, it's company policy that everybody has a receipt. In other words, you don't say, I see that in your bag that you robbed.
We had a case where someone had a bottle of wine and they bought it in the shop next door and they put a thing and someone said, have you a receipt for that? And they sued them and got $20,000 defamation.
I had an experience many years ago where somebody with a receipt was rugby tackled on Grafton Street and somebody who had a receipt for something they bought in a shop that I worked in. Thankfully, it wasn't insomnia. It's before that.
So what you're saying is they are entitled to do this. Should he, he's saying,
Well, he's been asked
should
here.
Should he agree with it or not?
He doesn't have a choice. He hasn't taken the job. He's been offered a job. These are the conditions. And I think as long as...
It's amazing. You always come up with the same advice. Suck it up. Isn't that what you're saying to Frank? Suck it up.
That's the first time you've said that today. I thought we're like 8 minutes into it and you haven't said suck it up once.
All right. Let's go to the next one. Hi, I'm managing a small business. I've been on the same rate, that assumably pay rate, for the last 3 years and would like to ask for a raise. I only get paid by the hour. What would be the normal pay rate for a manager of a small rural business, or where would I find out? I really think I'm due a raise, but I don't know how much to ask for.
This is a genuine query, and I would suggest to this individual, you need to do a little bit of homework. So you need to, even if it's anecdotal, you need to find out. And he hasn't said what type of business it is. So I'm not in a position to say.
Where would you access that information?
Well, one thing is you could go on to recruitment companies. You could look at jobs advertised. You know, there's,
good idea, yeah.
You know, and you see, you get a sense then
of
for the
grade
marketplace.
Involved. Yeah, yeah.
And because I think when you're doing any negotiation, knowledge is power. So the more information you have about wages in the sector, about, you know, and I would then
maybe
say
ask
to them,
a competitor, a mate or something like that, yeah, anecdotally.
And I think you just need to be careful about, you know, a discretion on it. But what I would say to him is once you've found what you maybe establish is the benchmark, ask for more than you expect. In other words, leave yourself a bit of leeway. So
is that the way you negotiate? Because I actually negotiate a different way. I'd say, Bobby, this is my walk-away price.
No,
and I mean this. And you can say that's a good deal or a bad day, but I always mean it. It is my walk-away. I will not give you more.
Yeah, and will you be true to that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if that's your style, that's fair enough.
It hasn't always worked out for me,
yeah,
I have to say.
No, and you've walked away from deals that you would like to have been part of.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I always leave myself a little bit of room, just that you have a place to fall back to.
But then how will they get your bottom line?
Well, only you know your own bottom line. Okay. And I think that's important for this chap.
So you think
to put
a value on himself.
He
looks for a 20% rise and hopes he gets 10%.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Hi, Bobby. I'm a contractor in one of the top multinationals in the country. Contractors are being utterly abused in my work. This could be the construction sector, engineering sector, something like that. And when one of them had the audacity to share an article about their plight at work, that is the fate of a subcontractor, they were bullied into silence by a rep of an outsourcing firm. Any advice? Please read this out. I'm sending an email to Down the Business also, but I rarely get a reply from them.
I added in that.
I'm really feeling the mental strain here.
And now I'm speaking to somebody who responds personally to the Down to Business account.
Okay.
But like Ivan, he doesn't even know what the Agony Uncle email, where it even goes.
Okay.
But listen to me. And this is kind of, it's a fairly serious allegation about being utterly abused. They're the two words that I'm zoning in on here. He doesn't give specifics of the abuse, so we don't know exactly what it is. But, you know, he said that sharing an article that damages the client company's reputation, it puts the company on the defensive. I'm not sure that's a great idea. In other words, you know, if a company is threatened with bad publicity, with, they're going to take a particular position on it. And that's what happens here. It puts them on the defensive. And I think maybe that you just need to be, like, there's a negotiating strategy here, as there is in any aspect or any job. But I think that the threat of public disclosure might be better than the reality of it here. And clearly what somebody did was
counterproductive, I would
it'd
be better to go direct and say, look, I'm not happy with this. I have no security of turnover of business or repeat business here. Look, we are either going to have a relationship as a subcontractor or not.
The other thing is, you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. Yeah. And that's the situation.
Airing
here.
Your dirty linen in public never works. That's all our queries. We've a full postbag, but keep them coming. AgonyUncle@newstalk.com. Don't bother with that Down to Business address. Now, speaking of Down to Business, you're off to Dungarvan.
You know, we get all the good
euro
jobs.
A €2 a mile, I'm not surprised. What's happening?
That should
in
earn me a couple of hundred.
I had a great betting shop in the square in Dungarvan. Dungarvan's a good business town because it's got a big catchment area of the entire West Waterford area. It had Glanby and different stuff.
Yeah,
there.
It is. You're right. It's an interesting place. It's also a really nice place to live. It's a commutable distance from Waterford. They did have, as you're right in saying, it was a strong market town with some industry there. But they also now have this new greenway, which is working.
I believe this bicycle thing.
Yeah,
Deirdre
it's going gangbusters.
Yeah.
So we're down there. We're in
so
the moorings.
So regaining the high street. Is that
yeah, yeah.
still going?
Absolutely it is.
Right.
I thought
you had that solved.
It's very hard to snuff us out.
Okay.
But we're going to go to Dungarvan. We'll be talking to loads of people. It's going to be a great show. And thanks for giving it a plug. I appreciate
All
it.
All right. Bobby will be in the Dacia country. Thank you for joining us on The Hard Shoulder. We'll have more next Tuesday at the same time. Thanks, Bobby.